going to be talking a little bit about family relationships, the way in which men and women struggle and succeed, hopefully, in relationships with family. It was interesting for me to sit and watch part of a movie that Jerry Swanson was showing the other evening on Ruth Youngdahl Nelson, Mother of the Year, and what fascinated me was a little story that she was telling on camera about a boy and his father who were in the museum and looking at the dinosaur exhibits, and the little boy was looking at the Brontosaurus and the Tyrannosaurus and all these different dinosaurs, and he said, "Daddy, what happened to these dinosaurs? Where did they go? What killed them? You know, what was it that ended their lives?" And the father simply said, "The climate changed." And it struck me that that same story is a good introduction for this discussion of family, because in many ways the climate has changed, and that's part of the problem. The climate has changed, and that's part of the problem for men in relationships with family. We've been talking about a couple of books, too. I'll make one more plug for the bookstore and for New Life for Men, as well as for The Seasons of a Man's Life, Daniel J. Levinson, a book that's in the bookstore, New Life for Men, a book that I wrote a couple of years ago with Ron Klug, about some of these changes and what it is that men can do and women can do to deal with this change in climate in our society. And if you've been here before, you know that we've been talking about the fact that, today we seem to be living between the times and having been taught one way and having to be functioning effectively in another. No, this is no more true than in the family. Because it's in the family that we really gained an understanding of what it was that we were supposed to be as men and women. It was in our early formative years, in our relationships with our parents and our brothers and sisters, if we had them, that we learned about what it was like and what it was to be a man and a woman. And yet, those same lessons don't hold us in as good stead today as they perhaps did in the past, because so much has changed and because things have been changing so rapidly. We talked a little bit about the fact that the traditional family doesn't exist in a majority any longer in our society. And just to review, the kinds of families that we have today, first of all, are much smaller in terms of the number of children. They're much different in their constitution as well. In our society today, people tend to marry later. They tend to, in many ways, I think, unfortunately, live together without being married, sometimes with several different people before a family is established. Child rearing is often postponed, certainly postponed well beyond the years that it typically had been. There are fewer children, as I mentioned, in families. But in addition, today we see many two-career families. We see both husband and wife working full-time, whether there are children in the home or not. We see blended families, the result of the high rate of divorce and dissolution of marriages in our society, and the recombination of marriage of families through remarriage, where we have a number of situations that sometimes are quite difficult. We have an experience, sometimes we joke about this, the experience of having a family with his children, her children, and their children. And it gets very complex in terms of how all those children relate together and who gets what and who's first and second and who's taken care of by whom and who loves whom and doesn't love whom. And so there are lots of those kinds of conflicts that are present today too. Then in addition, we have many single-parent families these days. either the husband or the wife with custody of the children. Traditionally, it's been the wife maybe more than the husband, but even that changing somewhat, as both parents now operate on a single basis in care for their children. A good friend of mine is divorced, lives down the street from us. A man has custody of his two daughters and has had custody of them, of both of them, at least since the one daughter was about 5 and the other was about 3 or 2, and continues to have custody of them now, one of them an adolescent and one still in elementary school. And then we have also more and more situations where we have shared custody. I'm aware of at least several situations that I've been involved in as a psychologist where I've been asked by the court to decide custody issues, or at least to give an opinion about custody issues, and know for a fact that several of them, and continue to monitor several of them, where there is actual shared equal custody, where the child moves back and forth between both parents' homes on a 6-month basis. In the one situation I'm thinking of, the parents live basically in the same neighborhood, but the child is in the child stays in the same school because the parents make arrangements to transport that boy to his same school. But he spends 6 months with one parent and 6 months with another. So all of these kinds of changes, generated by changes in our society, by changes in men and women, create new challenges and new struggles for families. No matter how it changes, however, the family will continue to be the main focus of a man's most important and meaningful relationships, in my opinion, and certainly as a woman's, too. Because it's in the family that people find their primary source of comfort and well-being and intimacy. Certainly for people who are single, for people who don't have a current family, they still have their family of origin, and it's in that arrangement, it's in that in those relationships that we experience our primary involvement with intimacy, companionship, and support. Certainly, speaking about men, friendships, relationships with coworkers, relationships outside of the family for both men and women are important and helpful, but at the same time, family seems to be, continues to be the primary source of meeting those important support and intimacy needs. Who was it that said, family is the only place where you, when you come home, they have to let you in. And when, you know, when the rubber hits the road, when everybody else has gone or is not available to you, it's usually to family that we turn. Friendships and work relationships are so important, but again, because of our society where these are where these kinds of relationships are more transient and where people move around a great deal and where those kinds of contacts seem to come and go rather than be a part of an ongoing contact with us over an extended lifetime, it's family, family of origin or family of creation that we tend to be involved with on a more extended basis. So the family stands out as the center of a man's emotional life. But how does a man live in his family? How does he relate? What's needed in families today? I think one of the ways that we can try to take a look at this is to take a look at where we've come from. And so I hope you're ready to take a look at something for yourself here today and a little exercise that I've found kind of helpful. And I'm going to put it on the board for you and kind of go through it for myself
and then give you an opportunity to do that. And after we've done that, then I want to come back and talk about some of the some of the ways in which we can become better family members. So a little exercise I call a family table. Maybe while I'm doing this, I can pass out some paper here. I hope most of you brought a pencil. If you haven't, maybe you can borrow one. If you just take this, take one sheet and tear it in half and keep half and pass it on to your neighbor, that way my paper will last a little bit longer. You don't have to do anything with it right now, but if you just kind of get ready for that.
Is this something we're going to give back to you?
No, not anything that you're going to give back, but it's something you just keep to yourself. I'm going to ask you in a few minutes to draw a picture of your family table. And that is the family table that you grew up and sat around and had dinner or supper or breakfast or your main meals and most of your meals as you grew up. I want to do this because I think we have to have some understanding of what we were taught about family as men and women before we can really take a look at what it is that we bring to our families and where it is we get stuck in our families. So I'm going to show you how to do that by drawing a picture of my family table. We don't have to worry too much about artistic talent or ability here. But I would like you to think about the table, your family table, somewhere probably between the ages of 5 and 10 years of age. So you could think back to that time and think back at what meals you spent there. Now, if you were in my family at that time, most of the time you ate your meals in the kitchen. When company came, and occasionally, mostly on Sunday, we ate in the dining room, but the family table I remember was in the kitchen, and the kitchen wall was kind of right here, and this table that I'm thinking about sat right up against the wall, like this, and you know, there was a salt and pepper over here, and we didn't have napkins, by the way. right at home here at Holden Village. But we did have something, this is interesting, I didn't think about it until just this moment, but we had something that we called a family napkin. I don't know if you...
Yeah,
it was kind of a dish towel, you know, just kind of a towel, and people would ask for the family napkin. I mean, now we have napkins, I want you to know that. But back when I was growing up as a kid, we had the family napkin. That's just a little aside for you. I'm not interested in your napkin situation. But this table then had a little leaf that kind of opened up. See, and it opened up out into the kitchen. Then over here was a sink, and this was the refrigerator over here, and I guess, and the stove, and that kind of, this is the door to the back porch here. But that's just into the table. You got to draw all the rest of this stuff. And here's what I want you to do then is just kind of place yourself at the table. Where did you sit? Now, in my family, my father sat here. My sister sat over here. Sister's 2 years older than I am. My mother sat here. Now, this was a strategic spot because my mother had to go back and forth to the stove and the refrigerator to serve the rest of us. And the sink was over here. I guess that's where the sink was over here. All the cabinets and stuff. And I sat over here. And it was directly across from my father. It's interesting in terms of my later years when we had some very serious conflicts that we were... Oftentimes, for example, when people come to my office and I see families, persons who sit right across from one another are the people who are in most conflict in the family. Not always, but this was a little bit of the case later in my family. Then my brother, who was about 8 years younger than I was, sat here. So I want you to first draw a picture of your family table like that, with the seating arrangements. Where did people sit? I think it's interesting in our family again that the two women sat here. My sister kind of assisting my mother. My father sat here. I sat over here. My younger brother sat on the end. And so that was kind of at least the placement of people in our family. But in addition to drawing the picture of your table, I want you then to also think about, in addition to indicating the seating arrangements, I want you to think about what was the focus of most of the discussions in your family? What happened around your family table? What did people talk about? In my family, what people talked about, and the focus was two things. What happened pretty much at work for my father that day, and what happened at school for us, for the kids. My father would ask about school. My mother would talk, I suppose, a little bit about home, but I don't really remember that much. I remember my father talking about his job, and I remember the kids being asked about and talking about school. So that's the second thing that I want you to think about. The third thing I want you to think about is what was the emotional tone of that discussion? Was it a happy discussion? Was it friendly? Was it an equal sharing? Did somebody run the discussion? And were you allowed to talk? Were the kids allowed to talk? We could never whistle at the table, by the way. This was one of the worst things that you could do in my family. Nobody ever whistled at the table, but somehow I got the message. Never whistle or sing at the table. We did say a prayer every day at our meal, at our dinner meal, or our supper meal, our evening meal. You might think about that. Then I want you to think about, as you think about what was discussed and who discussed it and what happened at the table, I want you to think about what did you learn about life around your family table. What did those discussions, what did that dynamic teach you about life? Secondly, what did it teach you about being a man or a woman? What did you learn at your family table about being a man or a woman? Here's what I mean by that for me. I think what I learned about life around this table. One was that my father was a very important person. My father was the person who pretty much asked the questions and was the focus of the discussion. Women, my mother, were there to support and to serve, certainly the meal and to get up. Often, for example, my father would ask for something or we would ask for something, my mother would get up. Get it. Partly because she was had access to it, partly because the kitchen was a place where she took care of those things, partly because this was the way I think it was set up in my family with the very patriarchal kind of situation. And we as children, although we were not at the level of my father, we were also in some ways served by my mother. I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm not particularly proud or defending it. I'm just saying that's the way it was, and that's what I want you to look at in your family. The other things I think I learned about being a man, what I learned about being a man, emotional tone, what I learned about life in terms of the discussion of family. I think I learned that life was kind of a difficult thing. I think I learned that life was situation where you had to work, you had to focus on work, where you had to talk about work and talk about school. And I think I learned that life was performance. The questions were, how did things go? What are you doing? How well are you doing? What kind of grades are you getting? How are you getting along? And it was very clear that good news was important. It was very clear that success was important. It's very clear that good grades were important. My father used to ask a question, I think it was a very telling question, would ask this question of me in particular, I think, as the oldest boy. Whenever I would talk to him about something, he always wanted to know what my, where I stood
in comparison to other people? Was I the best in reading if I was doing well? Was I the most, was I getting the best grades? Was I the best student if we were talking about sports? Was I the best hitter in baseball? If we're talking about the game, how many hits did I get? My father often also wanted to know if I didn't get any hits. He would often say, well, how many hits did you get today? And I would say, well, I got 2 for 4, 2 hits and 4 at bats. And he would always want to know, he wouldn't want to know what the hits were. He wanted to know what the mistakes were. So I think I learned a lot about kind of a performance ethic, success ethic, focus on doing the right thing, focus on excelling. Very much a pattern that was communicated there. And a kind of criticism, too. What I learned about being a man around this table. I think I learned that men are supposed to be in charge. I think I learned that women are supposed to support men. I think I learned a very traditional male role around this table. I think I learned a focus again on work and performance. So I think that tells you then a little bit about it. I'm not saying that this is right or wrong. I just want you to think about what you learned. What you learned is not necessarily what you are now. I mean, you may have tried to change that, work with that in some way. But that's what I want you to do for a few minutes. So I want you to draw that picture of your table, and I want you to answer those questions just for yourself by making a note for yourself. Why don't you go ahead and do that now? We're going to turn off the tape for a while and just have you work with that for about 3 minutes. I thought about putting you together in little groups or one-to-one to kind of talk and share with your tables with another person, but some of you haven't done it and don't have paper, and others of you have just started talking about it already, and that's okay. But maybe, does anybody want to share their table and what they learned? Anybody want to tell us about their table? Any men in particular? But women, fine.
On a farm, the hired man was set next to my dad so that they could have man talk.
Uh-huh.
And then the girls and the boys and mom in the middle.
Okay. So it's pretty clearly a male dominant kind of.
The girls and mom. And mom
okay. Okay. And were you then a part of the waiting on situation?
Yeah, as a girl, I was.
Okay. So what did you learn about life and about your role as a woman around that table?
That in the house we serve the men.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do their work outside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the way it should be.
Okay. That's the way things were. Okay.
I don't remember much about the table between the ages of 5 and 10, but I can recall the one when I was in high school, and it was a square table, and my father sat at the head, and my mother sat on the left-hand side,
mm-hmm.
and my sister across from her, and myself next to my mother and my brother across from my mother was on the left because all the kitchen paraphernalia were right behind her, and so that was similar to what your situation was.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed primarily world events. I don't recall discussing, specifically about school performance and stuff like that, but there
mm-hmm.
was obviously a check on how everybody was doing. And the emotional tone was that life was very tough and very serious, and what my dad did was very important, and so. And the other area was table manners.
Mm-hmm.
And you toe the line, mm-hmm. no exceptions, and you ate everything on your plate. And that's how it was in my family.
Okay. And what did you learn about being a man? What did that picture, do you think, about being a man growing up at that table?
Well, that it was a male-dominated world. That the men were at the head of everything. They ran things.
Mm-hmm. The man was in charge. And the man kind of led the discussion around these serious issues. And okay. Anybody else? Yes.
I was an only child, so my father used to sit on the head of the table, my mother in the where she could get to the kitchen, and I sat in the middle. And sort of one said, all I can remember is that they talked about me. But really.
You were an only child, and they talked about you. The focus was on you.
And I was skinny, hard to believe now, but they kept trying to feed me. And I seem to be a lot of the table conversation, but what is funny is that ever since I was married, I don't like square dining room tables. I have always had a round dining room table, and I don't know why, but I don't like square dining room tables.
And you did say you had a square table as a
Yes,
child.
It was a square table. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was too much concentration.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I definitely prefer round tables.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that would be the pattern for most families with an only child, that they would be very, especially if they're loving, caring parents, the focus would be very much on that child. Sometimes that can be a kind of an overwhelming focus, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes that can be, you know.
And I never had to help my mother. It was her that used to bring this stuff to me and my father.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of strange when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just took it for granted. That's how it should be, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that was a little bit of our situation in that my mother tended to serve both my father and us as children. The children were special in some ways. We weren't oppressed, but there was pressure to perform, to be somebody, to do something, and it was clearly coming from here. This was nurturance, and this was pressure, and yet we were special because I could recall times when, for example, we didn't want to eat what my mother made, and she would make us something different sometimes. Give us a make us sometimes if they had liver and onions, she'd make us a hamburger. So it wasn't like there was a lot of meat in my family, meat and potatoes. And for some reason this week I've been thinking about a lot of French fries too. Right? And there's those big mounds of mashed potatoes, gravy dripping from the side.
I was an only child also. I lived on a farm, and there's one difference in that my mother's brother, an uncle, who was a lifelong bachelor, was partners with my father. And instead of having his own house, he lived with us. You know, it's like having two head of the household. It was very quiet. And I remember the discussion not centering around me so much, but the day's activities, what was done during the day, and what they had to do the next day to get a certain crop ready or this field plowed or whatever. I don't remember much lightness in the family. You know, it was serious type of things, and talking about basically the work that was done and it had to be done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what did you learn about being a man from that?
Basically the same type of thing, you know. I had to think about the work, the things that needed to be done, the future, kind of review what had been done, and kind of keep tabs on where you are in life, but just looking ahead, but not too far, because we never know what a week is going to bring. But generally, we can look ahead a day or two and say, "Well, what it looks like it's going to be okay tomorrow to do this or that."
Okay. And you were an only child in that situation.
Yes.
And so how were you treated? I mean, how, what was...
I was...
Was there focus on you then?
No, there wasn't much focus on me.
Uh-huh. Well, did you get a sense of what expectations there for you, or
were there? I mean, my father would tell me, I need you to go down and do this tomorrow when I was small, you know, and let's say 8, 9 years old, I had to go hoe weeds around a certain building or something and get that cleaned up. And then whenever I got that done, then I basically had to report back.
Were you allowed to speak, participate in the discussion, or were you pretty much...
I believe I was allowed to, but I really didn't too much.
Anybody else?
Have much to say.
Okay. Yeah.
I was in a family of four boys, and so my mother was the only woman in the house, and so I wasn't prepared for marriage very well. I remember our family situation around the table, and we all talked, except Dad, didn't talk a whole lot, mostly ate. eating was a very serious thing to him.
Uh-huh.
You sat down to eat, you got the job done, or you didn't give much.
Uh-huh.
And I think the subject, we focused on similar things, our day's stories, some planning for the next day or that evening. It took a lot of coordination to stay as organized as we were. And the mood was light. It was light and happy. It was like a celebration. We never started the meal until everyone was there. No one left until everyone was done. We always had dessert.
Would you tell us some of the kinds of dessert?
For some reason this week I've been thinking about it. I think I learned from that. The first thing that came to mind was I learned that it was vital to be together every day.
Mm-hmm.
The family had to be together once a day.
Mm-hmm.
And about being a man, maybe a couple of things. One was get the job done.
Okay.
Sit to eat, eat.
Uh-huh.
party, when you talk, that's it.
Uh-huh.
And Mom was, I think we all understood Mom to be the key, at least I did.
Okay.
But,
the key in what way?
The house was her domain.
Okay.
Her team. And Dad didn't tread on that, and none of us treaded on it.
Uh-huh.
She was the boss, and she ran it, and we supported her. That was about it. And she kept us out of where she wanted us out of it.
Okay. Anyway, yes.
I agree with everything he said. Our table seemed very similar to that. However, in the summer, my father was never there. And he was working construction, he worked evenings. And then it was, dinner table was total chaos. It was five kids and Mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the wintertime when Dad was there, it was suppressed kids waiting to explode. And Dad waiting to explode if the kids exploded. And I kind of came along with the opinion, I don't know if I developed it now or back then, but whatever Dad was doing in the summer wasn't all that important because it was too tense in the winter. But Mom was very special in the way she treated us when Dad wasn't there.
Okay. Maybe take one more. Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to share something because all of the families that have spoken so far have been real healthy sounding families, and I think it's important to remember that a lot of us have grown up in troubled families, and that for both men and women has a real significant impact on how we enter young adulthood, and that a lot of us spend a lot of time undoing things. My dad was an alcoholic, and in our home I had no brothers, and it would be interesting to see how growing up in our home would have impacted a boy. there was a tremendous amount of criticism and complaining, and the world was a hateful, terrible place that he couldn't get along in. And my mother was very, very supportive of my sister and I, and very supportive of him in a quiet way. And the message that I got, the two most important messages that I have struggled with in my adult life, are that there's nothing in manhood to be respected. That men are generally slouches and ne'er-do-wells. I have undone that, but it's taken a long time to undo that. That was very much the message that my dad gave my sister and I. He couldn't keep a job, and he was full of nothing but criticism for us and for life in general. And the other part is that
there would be no way for you to get another view out of that.
No, there's no, with no other males around. And the other thing is that women suffer quietly. You know, when my mother died, I am convinced through the stressful relationship she had with my dad. And so the other significant message is that women, women serve and suffer regardless of the quality of the man that she's with. So I think, anyway, I just contribute that only because it's important to know statistically that there are a lot of people coming from troubled families.
No question about it. I didn't ask you, you know, to detail the problems, but you're right. Obviously, a lot of us would have had problems in our families. And I tried to just allude to a little bit in mine just to not make it seem like everything was just fine. But what I was really getting at, and certainly I'm not trying to overdo this, but I do want you to hear, and I think you could hear in those examples, where do we come from? You know, what was it like? I mean, most of us are pretty much in the same age bracket. I suppose that there's a variation here of 20 or 30 years in some of us, but
sort of.
Yeah, sort of. But you know what is the role here? It's pretty defined. It's pretty traditional. It's pretty much a role that says the man works, and he works hard, and he's serious, and he's in charge, and he plans, and he controls, and he gets the job done, and the mother is in charge of the house and serves the others, often is the key, and has a very strong impact on the families, not to diminish a woman's impact, but just to talk about the way in which roles were aligned. And for most of us, probably 30 years ago or 40 years ago, that's the way most families were. Now, here's the problem. You're taught in that family. You learn about what it's like to be a man or a woman in this family. And now you're called upon to have your own family, you see. And you're called upon to have your own family in a way that has to deal with the struggles of the past, including all the yuck and all the crap that comes out of some families and situations and experiences. And you're called upon to deal with people in a new way. If I grew up in a way that saw my mother taking care of all this, by the way, I forgot to tell you, we didn't do the dishes either as kids. My mother did the dishes. And the dishes had, you know, some interesting food scraps on them. Sometimes there were pieces of pork chop left.
I think you need a white table.
But see, if that's what I saw every day, if that's what I had presented to me, and I mean, I wasn't consciously learning, but if that's what's there, how does Joel Vaughn here at age 10 deal with Pat Vaughn at age, I'm not going to say, but now around issues that are very important in our world and for women, with women whose consciousness and whose role and whose function have changed a great deal. With families that are different, with families that maybe this person isn't even there, or with families that have two or three kids, some of whom are related in very complex ways to these other people. That's what I think we have to see in terms of this business of caught in the middle of change. Now, of course, there's always this change. I mean, society and culture and values to some degree and relationships are evolving, I suppose. I don't have the total perspective that someone of 500 or 600 years of age would have, but there is that change, and there's always that generation change, but for us it seems to me is a very different kind of generation. I could ask you, if we had the time, to draw your table now and what it's like. And I could ask you to think about what it is now that happens around your table, and how is it alike or different than the table that that you grew up with? And my guess is it would be in some ways different, but in some ways perhaps very much the same. That there would be situations in which you are doing things very differently, partly because you want to do them differently, you didn't like the way they were done, and partly because things have changed in terms of what's expected of you, but also that there are some ways in which some of these patterns are still maintained. I can tell you, for me, for example, I tend to play this kind of role still. I tend to be the questioner of my family, and particularly my children. Well, how are things going? How are you doing? I mean, performance is important to me. It can't not be important to me. I mean, it was ingrained into me. When you're, you know, when I went 2 for 4, I had to explain the strikeouts, you know. And so we can't escape that completely. That's in there. We can become aware of it. And as I said earlier, there's a change process, and it's a stage process, and the first step in change for anybody is awareness. You can't go anywhere without understanding what it is that you are dealing with. And so the more we can be aware of where we might be coming from, the easier it is to de-roll or to get out of the dictation of a certain way of being or acting or doing. Now, I don't do that consistently. My kids will tell you that that I do far too much of that. And there are other ways in which that dynamic continues to get me into trouble in terms of trying to have a relationship with my wife and with my family that is a sharing, mutual, flexible kind of arrangement, as opposed to a dominating, controlling, planning, taking charge kind of relationship. But this is what men are stuck with. This is the problem for us. That's been emphasized, that's been reinforced and rewarded. And when we've had success with that, we're loath to change it. We're loath to change it in relationship to our children. We're loath to change it in relationship to our spouses and to other people. And so the process of change is a gradual one. It is one that's happening over a period of time. And so I'd ask you, especially women who are struggling with these issues and want their husbands to become, or their boyfriends, or their relationships to become more mutual, to see that if they're anywhere close to this age bracket, struggling with a lot of this probably. They haven't been taught. They haven't experienced that. They don't know quite how to use it or how to do it. They're going to struggle and fall and stumble and maybe be successful in some areas. But it's an incomplete kind of growing, and it's a process that has to take place. Yes?
How can it be any different when the child is small and you don't expect the child to initiate conversation or to say, well, Dad, how are things at the office today? It has to be the other way around until they get old enough to talk on a person-to-person basis.
Yeah, I don't mean to say that that a child should be able to talk on the equal level, on an equal level. But when a child has sat in this position and watched this pattern, and when the content has been this, and the message has been this, that that is still going to shape that child. We still have children who sit in this position and listen, but hopefully there won't be just one person, just on a very simple and even almost a nonsensical level, but there won't be just one person who sits here with access to the refrigerator. That there won't be one person who gets up and gets the food for everybody else. That there won't be just one person who takes care of the dishes. You know, now that's, again, not going to solve the total problem. But when we talk about mutuality, and when we talk about shared responsibility, and when we talk about more flexible relationships and more flexible roles for people, we're talking about people trying to live those out in a way that doesn't give that very stereotypical message. And yet again, that takes time. Other questions? Yeah.
Just one comment, and I'm not trying to be negative, but as far as one person to handle the kitchen or go to the refrigerator, we have these friends whose children like to get up and go to the refrigerator during a meal, and they are told to sit down because you can't have them going to the refrigerator and getting out anything they want, you know, during the meal. And
yeah.
So that's sometimes, you know, it's better for mom or dad to have the control during mealtime or during kitchen time.
Yeah, I don't mean that, you know, they would get up and just get whatever they want, but rather, you know, I need some more milk, Mom. Oh. Whereas if I said I needed to get some more milk, you know, somebody got it for me.
My mother did something really interesting. She, when us kids finally made it to Walden, in grade school, Mom started working, and she worked part-time, more part-time than part-time. And after Mom and Dad had been married like 20, 25 years, Mom came home from work one night and said, "That's it, I'm done cooking." And she cooks. She continued to cook. She would go to get her hot dishes and things like real quick, but there was no more meat and potatoes and blah-blah-blah-blah-blah meals. They were cooked on Sunday for a long time. Mom had it, and my father was not interested in cooking or participating in it, and so he just has been quiet and suffered all these years.
Well, but see, again, I think that's a good example of what's happening here, that your mother changed in some way. Your mother said, "No, I can't do this. I don't want to do this anymore. And your father, for whatever reason, did not deal with that very well, or didn't know what to do with that, or was whatever in relationship to that. And you know, that's the kind of struggles, though, that families go through. In the book, we use examples, actual examples changed around to protect people, of situations, families, where women have changed and where men were unable to handle that change, in part because of this, in part, you know, because it's always been this way, this is the way it should be, this is the way I was taught, this is the way it's right, and now you don't want to do it. But that's exactly the problem. You see, that's what's been happening. Women have been saying, "No, I'm working too. I don't want to do this anymore. This isn't fair. You've always made all the decisions. I want to make some of them." And men are caught in those switches, and many men don't really know what to do with it. And many families, many marriages have broken up because of that, because of that kind of change. And that those are the casualties of this very rapidly changing kind of society. And there's a very dramatic change that's taken place in women's consciousness, women's roles over the past 20 years. And many men again, I think more of my age and maybe even older, are caught more in that than maybe younger men might be. But any other thoughts here before we talk about some of the things that men can do?
I came from a family of 9 kids, 5 sisters and 4, 3 brothers. And maybe it's a little different, but my mother was the first one to, the last one to sit down, the first one to get up. And the first service I deserved or whatever. But anyway, she could milk 3 cows to my dad's 1. She could pitch hay right alongside of my dad. And I kind of feel sorry for my wife because I think I expected that of her. But we worked it out okay, 30 uh-huh. years or so.
Uh-huh.
Or so. A little different. My mother worked.
Yeah. But in a way, you know, that's the, that's, I think, the, that, your mother and that style is the model for today's woman who works, takes care of the kids, takes care of the house, does everything. That role, too, although that's a change, that's an unequal role. And women... Women are struggling with that and are tired of that too. And are saying, I can't do all that. I shouldn't be expected to do all that.
Well, that his mother also went in and fixed the meals for those 9 kids.
Sure, I understand. Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, she did everything. And as he said, she was up before everybody else and went to bed after everybody else. The only difference between her role and this more traditional role is that she also did the work, did a lot of work on the farm too. A pretty difficult spot to be in. But let me make a few finishing comments here around, okay, how could we do, what do we need to do? What do men need to do today that could be helpful? I think primarily spouses and children need 2 important things from men today. I think one, they need greater involvement in the emotional life of the family. And I think you can see, although fathers were involved, it was often not around, we didn't talk much about anybody talking about feelings or sharing activities. We heard dad talking about his work and heard dad asking questions about what everybody is doing and planning for the next day, but we didn't hear much sharing, although there were a couple of comments about togetherness there. Secondly, I think that spouses and families need a deeper involvement in the emotional life of the family from the point of view of quality time. I think families today and spouses today need more time, and they need a better kind of time from men. There's an interesting study that some of you may be familiar with by Yuri Bronfenbrenner, a famous social scientist who hooked up microphones to babies, to infants, not infants, but I think children the age of 1 to 3, and measured the amount of time that fathers spent daily with the child. And this was about 1976, I think. How much time would you say they found that dad spent in direct play or conversation or contact with those children?
10 minutes.
7 minutes. 5 minutes. The fathers estimated that they spent 15 to 20 minutes a day. The actual time was less than 1 minute a day. Another study found that men spent more time shaving daily than they did in relationship with their kids. These studies, of course, always, you know, it's like studies in social sciences, psychology are a little bit like proof texting of the Bible. You can find a study probably to defend anything. But I think it did speak, and those kinds of things do speak to how limited sometimes we have been as fathers in relationship with our kids. I don't think they put any microphones around any of the spouses, so we don't know how much time men spend in direct communication with their wives, but many women will tell you that it is not nearly enough. I was struck the other evening in Vespers, or sitting behind the family, and
there were, I don't know how many kids, but there were several there. I don't know whether those were all from the same family, but I was struck by the fact that Dad was in rapt attention to the sermon, and Mother had a kid on each arm, and one in her, kind of between her legs, and there was another one over here, and they were all relating to Mother. I mean, if they wanted something, if they had to go to the bathroom, you know, tugging on her arm, and the other kid was kind of, you know, trying to get under Mom's arm, and Dad was just really dealing with the sermon having a great time. Mother was just harried. I mean, just incredibly harried. And I think it's, again, a reflection of how things happen in our family, that so much of the emotional focus is on Mother still. And so much of the performance focus is on Dad. And I think as long as we have it broken down along those lines, and as long as we as men and fathers contribute to that by playing that role and working that role and not stepping in other ways, we're going to run into problems and in our families, and our kids are going to run into problems. But then, if a man wants to work as hard at his family life, or wants to work harder at family life, what can he do? One, I think men need to open up more with family members. How do you do this? I think men need to look for times when they can share more of themselves. I don't think men share themselves in a family relationship. They teach, and they preach, and they direct, and they punish, and they question, but they don't share. They don't talk about who they really are, what they feel. They never talk about their shortcomings. I mean, how many times do you hear a man say, you know, I really feel like I messed up at work today. Might say that to his wife. Never says that to the kids. I mean, I would have never heard that from my father around the table. And yet, I think it is a way that we can begin to open up intimacy if we could share more of what we can't do. Always into what we can do. We're always into maintaining the role, the fiction, the picture, the presentation of self. Second, I think you have to keep the lines of communication open. We talked about this the other day, and I think there's several important ways to do that. Talk, don't just preach and teach. Second way is write. We talked in here the other day about writing down and writing a note to, or writing maybe a letter to people. The other way is touch. You know, a gentle hand on your son's shoulder, an arm around your wife, a playful hug for your daughter. Those kinds of things are very important. You know what memory I have of my father, a memory that has stuck for me? One Sunday morning, one Easter Sunday morning, we went to sunrise service at church, and I didn't bring any breakfast, and it was just my father and I. Everybody else was going later or whatever it was. He didn't like to go to church, so we got up early, and I guess we were going to go to get it out of the way. We said, get it out of the way? Yeah, I think that's what it was. But I got kind of faint, and my dad, I guess, kind of saw that I was pale, and I kind of fell back up against him, and he grabbed me around the shoulders, and he just kind of held me. And he kind of, you know, just rubbed my shoulders and my back. I was about 12 years old at the time. And that memory sticks in my mind because my father didn't touch very much. He certainly didn't touch when I was older. But I still remember what that felt like to have my dad behind me and touch me. And I think if we could see the importance of that kind of thing for our own children, at any age, if you could just touch more than we do, we don't do that enough. As I said before, you don't have to be the mad hugger, but you have to see the people need human touch, and we as men need to do that for the people in our family. Third, be careful about being quick to judge. I had a man in my practice who was talking to me about his father, and he said something that stuck with me, and I don't know if somebody else has said this, but if not, this guy made the group one of the better quotes that I've ever heard. He said, "My father never fixed the problem, he fixed the blame." He said that one day in the session. How many experiences have you had like that, you know, with father? You don't fix the problem, you don't deal with the problem, you deal with the, you know, you fix the blame. What did you do? What did you do wrong? We have to be a different kind of man than that. Too often, as I said, we're the questioners, the listeners, the problem solvers, the judgers of other family members. Three more, we'll just go through them quickly right at the end. Four, be alert to getting caught in your own childhood traps. So often we're bound to either repeat or reverse our situation. Have to be careful. And the only way to be careful about your childhood traps is to be aware where you came from. What were you given? It's not to blame your parents. It's not to blame that situation. That's the way it was then, but you have to know what it was. You have to know where you come from so that you know where you can go to. Five, plan times and experiences together. These don't have to be 2 weeks at Disney World. As a matter of fact, the worst kinds of times together are when you don't spend any time together, but you plan a big vacation. It always flops. It's terrible. People are tense and upset and it doesn't work. They come all the way to Holden Village and nobody wants to be there, you know. Don't focus just on those times. Rather than always making room for your family or your children, in your world, try to enter theirs. What is the way in which you could enter your children's world in a way that values what they're doing? Play a game they choose. Better yet, let them teach you one and watch how excited they become. Family games, I think, are great and very important. As a kid, we couldn't wait for a time when our parents would play a game with us. They didn't play very many, but when they were there, family chores are good to do together. Some of the best conversations I've had with my kids are taking the dog to the vet or doing the dishes or doing something together. If I sit down and say to them, what happened in school today, they don't tell me. I say nothing. Oh, it's all right. Well, how's it going? Oh, it's fine. I mean, I'm a psychologist. I know how to ask the right questions. I know how to talk to people. I can't talk to them. They don't talk to me. I could get a kid, I could get a mute kid in my office to talk to me. I can't get my kids to talk. But when I'm with them, when I'm not questioning them, when there's no agenda, they talk to me. We're doing the dishes, they talk to me. Okay, last one. Understand that your children are growing and changing. Accept their incompleteness, nurture their own unique path, and accept rather than expect.
Okay. Peace.